Welcome to Software Testing Unleashed, the podcast for testers, developers, and software makers who live quality as an attitude. Get fresh ideas and sharp insights to grow your mindset, to learn new methods, and to drive real change in how we build software. Better software and better teams for a better world. Hi, I'm Richie, your podcast host, and I'm happy to present you another episode in this quality series. As you know, this podcast is a podcast for the software community, so for you. So please send me your feedback to topics and guests you would like to hear and see in this podcast. Yes, see too, because this podcast is also available with video on YouTube. Just take a look. So please send your feedback to podcast@testing-unleashed.fm. Today, I talk with one of the sharpest minds in software thinking, Kevin Henney. He's author, speaker, and a master of putting things in a perspective, especially when we talk about the future. Together, we looked into the crystal ball. Will AI take over software engineering? And will be maybe coding look like other in the year 2035, or maybe still like the same as today? And what makes good developers stand out, even in an AI-driven world? And finally, why understanding people might be more important than understanding tools in the future? Are you ready for the time travel into the future? So let's dive in. Hi, Kevin. Nice to have you here on the podcast.
Yeah, cool. Right, excellent.
Thank you that you joined here for the OOP. You have a talk in the afternoon today, I think.
Yes. So I have a talk that I'm doing the end of the afternoon with Frank Bushman.
Yeah.
And then I have another talk that I'm doing just solo tomorrow, just before lunch.
Ah, yes, yes, yeah, great. Yes, and I read the abstracts in front of the conference, and I saw you had one abstract about the future prediction, maybe, or some possible future for software engineers. How will we work in 2034 or something?
That's right. Yeah, that's the one I'm doing with Frank. We're kind of doing a little bit of crystal ball gazing. And it's the Software Engineers Playbook 2034, so 10 years from now. What will we be doing? And obviously, there's a lot we could put in that talk, but it's only 1 hour. So we've actually spent a lot of time deleting slides and deleting content. So to come up with a kind of a smaller core message.
Yeah, yeah. So that's I want to talk about this also here in this episode, because it's the future is always a part. I mentioned also I'm known the future optimist. Mm. And so I'm very happy to talk about what is your prediction, what is your crystal view to the future of software engineering.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I may be slightly less of a techno-optimist than I used to be. I think my view of the future, and I think myself and Frank have slightly different paths on this, which I think is going to make for an interesting talk. But one of my perspectives, when I look at the data, it's not going to be as different as people think it is. Mm. It's going to be different in kind of look at the current trends, see where those are going. Yeah, there's nothing radical. There's a few things that are going to kind of shift a bit. All you have to do is to think, okay, if now is 2024, what was 2014 like?
Mm.
If you can remember 2014, what was 2004 like? If you can remember 2004, what was 1994 like? And I have been in... I have been in software development for longer than that. Yeah. And so it's interesting to look at the cycles and then start saying, oh, yeah, there are real differences between how I was developing now and then. And there are also some things that absolutely haven't changed or have just moved very slightly. Mm. And to look at those. And so if we look at things like 2034, I mean, one of the ones that I have been going on about to people is just like programming languages. Yeah. They're whatever you're using today.
Yeah.
That is going to be 80 to 90%. If you actually look at the data, when we actually look at the data, the top five languages in use, none of them was developed. That's not true. One of them was developed in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most people are programming in languages that were developed in the 20th century. If you look at the top 20 languages, it's still there. If you look at the top 50, it's still there. So in other words, programming language movement is actually really not that big. The languages themselves evolve, but the makeup of the languages, no, not really. You know, you're not, you know, I get a lot of people say, oh yeah, but we'll be all, so if I'm programming native, will I be using Rust in 2034? Actually, there's a fairly good chance.
Mm.
But Rust is already, at this point, over 10 years old.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, nobody that, there are no languages that were developed in the 2020s that are in the top 20 languages of use at this point. So the point there is some things move much more slowly.
Mm.
If we look at other trends in terms of our development, agile development, or at least the name has become very normal. The number of people actually doing agile development is still pretty low. And I suspect that that won't change 2034. We look at other things, other certain technologies. Some people think of 5G as being the future. I think of it as being the present.
Yeah.
So we're looking to 6G maybe. And then we have the other areas, which some of which are hype-driven, metaverse, cryptocurrency and things like that. If we look at just the last couple of years' trends on those are pretty much crashed as a vision of the future. They will have potentially a place, but it's not going to be a dominating place. There's no evidence of that. Web 3, people have been talking about it for over a decade. By that point, if you look at Web 2, Web 2, within a decade of that term being coined, it was a thing. 10 years on from Web 3 being talked about, it's still not a thing. And you know what? I don't think it ever is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
There's no evidence to suggest we're moving in that direction. Cryptocurrencies, central bank digital currency might become a thing. That's quite credible. The rest, everybody's now kind of, it's not treated as currency. So again, we don't see any evidence of change there. Metaverse is fragmented. I don't think we're going to get a metaverse. I think we're just going to get a few more AR and VR things.
Mm.
And there are certain niches, some industrial applications and gaming. I think that's where it's going to be. But is it going to be a thing that people use every day in a deep, immersive sense for all of their time? Gaming.
Yeah.
And we already have that. Yeah. So in other words, that's a continuation of that line.
Yeah.
But the one everybody wants to talk about is AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was saving that one. That's the one everybody wants to talk about.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, you were waiting for that. I just thought I could start with that one now. That's the one everybody wants to know about.
Yeah.
And there are reasons to, there are certain things in the broad application of AI that are at this point uncertain in terms of the relationship between AI and big data, and therefore, where did that data come from? What are the legal ramifications of that data? What are the existing intellectual property laws that are being enforced?
Mm.
And that's currently going through the courts, this question of large data training sets and the relationship to copyright. There's a lot of interesting stuff there. I can't predict the future of what courts are going to do, so I'm not even going to try. But that is something we need to watch over the next couple of years, because that will influence the future. The question of ethical considerations on how much of a relationship we have with checking the results, particularly when it comes to systems that are automated and make judgments that affect human lives. This is a question not of technical ability. Anybody who is framing it as a question of technology has misunderstood how people work. This is a question of our involvement. This is a question of what do we want and how do we want to shape that. It's very much, and I don't just mean we in the development space, that's a broad question. And we should not just let somebody who's a tech bro just tell us what it's going to be. No, we have a choice here. And the evidence is that if we don't properly take the choice, a number of people are going to be disadvantaged there because that's the very nature of a statistical-based approach to AI. It is not a reason-based approach. It's statistical. And the problem with anything that is statistically based is it represents an image of the past.
Yeah.
And it represents the most likely, but that means it ignores edge cases or the things that are seen to be less than a majority. So we need to watch out for that one in terms of the social implications. But I think we're already aware of this.
Yes.
I don't think that's news. I just think that now becomes a thing. And we need to also see how legislation is going to affect it. The EU directive on this is one of the first. The question is, will it be as influential on to the world as GDPR was, which has been hugely influential? And it's not entirely clear that it is. It's been a little bit watered down. It's probably not going to really take force until at least next year. And from a practical point of view, perhaps even 2026. So I think that one is too soon to tell. But we need to see what other governments are going to do. So is there going to be any kind of international kind of consensus, or is there going to be huge differences? Because that also tells us something about the future.
Yes.
But obviously what a lot of developers want to know is, what is AI going to do for me or to me?
Yeah.
Will I have a job in 2034?
Yeah.
And I made a prediction last year. Actually, I made a few predictions. I'm going to rest on these because I'm not normally when I make. I always tell people, you know, prediction is a fool's game, and you are most likely wrong. But so I'm going to very definitely cherry pick the ones that I have got right.
Yeah.
In 2016, I was asked a question about AI and the future, and I said, do I think we have a job? Yes.
Hmm.
But my answer, and it was at MobiConf in Poland in 2016. So you actually find this in the Q&A on the video. And I said, yeah, well, developers are going to be needed. The concept of development doesn't change. Hmm. All those people who say, oh yeah, we're going to have natural language programming and that's going to be fantastic. It's like, you really need to understand history. First of all, you need to understand history. Then you need to understand language, and you need to go and talk to some customers.
Yeah.
And then you will realize how safe your job is.
Yeah.
Because programming is not merely the assembly of syntax.
Mm.
It is the application of precision. It is the seeking of precision. And what is the answer? What is it that I'm trying to do? And it turns out that if you specify something badly in natural language, it works out even worse than if you did it in code. And we already know, for example, that we can actually take inspiration from the most widely used programming paradigm on the planet, the spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
What we know from the spreadsheet is that most people who use a spreadsheet do not have a software development background.
Yes.
We also know that most spreadsheets are unmaintainable, incomprehensible, and buggy.
Yeah.
That if we are saying that the future of software development is people who are not software experts doing this stuff, your job is safe because that stuff will need to be understood and fixed. That's the first point. Spreadsheets didn't put anybody else out of a job. They actually create opportunities. The other thing is, when we look at AI assistants of our work and a prediction. So in 2016, one of the things I said was, one of the things we might see is the balance of our time shifts. But I said, and I made a prediction about that, you're going to need to get good at testing. Because if you are just going to take the first thing that is generated and you don't know what it's supposed to do, then guess what? You're going to end up being a maintenance program. I made that prediction again last year on Mastodon, and I've now managed to retweet that. So it's now out there in the written form last April. And my observation was that most generated AI, the way that programmers are going to use it, we've seen how programmers use the tools they're given. There is no evidence to suggest it's going to be for the better. The majority of developers will create legacy code. They will now just do it faster. And so in other words, they're going to take away the fun bit. This is what I think is so ironic. Many developers are going to remove the bit of the job that they enjoy. And they're going to create maintenance code, and they're kind of they are dealing with code that somebody else wrote. They don't understand why. And so, in other words, developers that go all in on generative AI to create their own code, whether it's at Copilot level or full on ChatGPT, give me this, are going to discover that they are now maintenance programmers. They've taken all of the joy out of their job. Well done. Have they become more productive? Oh, they'll be making more commits.
But
this is the interesting thing. A recent study has shown that already there is a downward pressure on code quality in GitHub. And the study was done by GitClear. They published it a couple of weeks ago, so January 2024. The quality's dropping already.
Okay.
And that's what's happening. Code churn is increasing.
Yeah.
What we're finding is there's more duplicate code, more copy and paste code.
Yeah.
The quality of the code is already going down. And this is what I'd say is early days.
Yeah.
But the code churn, the idea of having to go back to something you just committed because it's wrong, that's increased.
Yeah.
And this is kind of stuff like, you know, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have told you this was going to happen because I know how people use tools.
Yeah, so, maybe we need more developer or more quality.
So that's the thing, is that we need to understand what the relationship is. And we also need to understand that for some developers, they are going to get a huge advantage. I've already said, we know these developers. They are a particular percentage. When they are given a new tool, they will get the best out of that tool. And then most developers will be, through no fault of their own, in an environment that doesn't encourage them to do the right thing. And they won't. It won't happen by magic. And so therefore, what you're going to find is increasing number of bugs, increasing code churn, increasing outages, therefore more focus on the development, but not necessarily learning the right lesson, which is maybe we need to focus on quality. Yeah. Maybe generating the wrong thing faster is not the end game.
Yeah.
So I think that by 2034, some companies will have realized this and will be acting on it. Those companies will be doing very well.
Yeah.
Most companies won't have that and will just be micromanaging people or putting a lot of pressure on people. And in the danger is actually software development in some companies may become very unpleasant. I don't think it's going to be a job that disappears. It may change. But I think unless we properly observe this, it's not going to be good. Software development is not going to disappear. I think it's going to splinter, and there will be a real difference between people who work in the quality environments, understanding what it is that they're getting from any tool, which has always been the challenge. Yeah. And then there are people who are going to be, as it were, puppets of the tool and very poor management processes. So that's my personal prediction on that particular.
I think also we have to mention that the software industry and the IT industry is an industry which has reached a part. They're always creating new jobs and new needs of their job. And I think this won't stop in the future. So the software industry will still get need the impact and get new people there to do their stuff.
The world runs on software. That's not going anywhere. And the idea, I'm not going to say it's never going to be a case where somebody is not able to articulate a business need and then have a meaningful interaction with something that's AI. But that's not the AI we have now.
Yeah.
That is at least a decade off before people start doing that, because that's not where the money is. That's not where the conversation is. It's certainly a possibility, but we're a long way from that. And the need for software is not going down. So I think that is relatively safe. And what I've been telling people is, your skills at being precise, your skills at being able to test, and your skills at being able to ask the right questions. What is it we're actually trying to do here? Those have always been there.
Yeah.
But now we're going to realize that they're much more obviously the stars of the show. And that's where your skills are. And honestly, knowing how to work with a programming language or programming languages is still absolutely relevant, because those are very different to working with natural language. And that's the bridge that we've always crossed, the ability to work with the kind of the soft, flexible space of humans and business, and then say, and this is what we need. And to do so in a concept and notation that is utterly precise and fixed, and be able to say, that's exactly what we meant. And importantly, we get the same result every time. That's really important. And importantly, it's empirical. I can show you that. Here's the tests. And here's the data that we see from the runtime. All of those things, they're not going anywhere. And if anything, those are the ones that are going to differentiate individual developers in terms of skill, and also companies. That's where the competition is.
What do you think about collaboration in the teams and in the organization? So we are struggling with agile, doing stuff together, interdisciplinary teams. And so it works sometimes, but not often. What do you think? Where will the trend go on here?
I think that this is an interesting one, because we have a very much a mix. And this is something that we have some companies and some organizations go in one direction at the same time as other companies going in other directions. So if you go back many decades, software development was done inside of the companies that were using the software. Everything was bespoke software. And the distance between the business users and the developers was naturally short, because you were in the company where you were actually developing the software for. Of course, it wasn't kind of software that we have these days in terms of scope, but it gives us one baseline. But in the same era, we also had large companies, institutional style companies, that definitely kept the software. They developed software for other people, whether it was governments or whatever, at scale. And guess what? We still have that, but we also have a lot of spaces in between. Mm. So what we find is that companies, there's the natural agility. If you're in a small company, there's a natural agility you just get by being in a small company.
Yeah.
If you are in a company where you are providing software to people in that company, you have an advantage over people who have an organizational boundary. Mm. But also we outsource more, so we introduce more organizational boundaries, yeah. And therefore we need to get over those. So we're constant, it feels like there's a constant churn and renewal, that some companies are constantly being created to serve the needs, the software needs of other organizations, but they're outside. But agility is about getting as close, it's about reducing the distance and communication distance. So we both increase and reduce it, or find the need to reduce it. So I don't think that's going to change in that sense. I think we are constantly doing that, but I think we have many more smaller companies and perhaps a faster turnover rate of some companies. But we also find companies that are large, and for them, agility means, oh, we used to be four layers of management before you could talk to somebody. Now we're three, and now we're agile. You know, it's just like, okay, you guys have still got a long way to go. But I think that pressure is always there. And I think that what we have seen in the last decade, particularly as more companies find themselves pulled into much more continuous deployment situation, is that the downside of that is a lot more pressure individually. It gets the kind of pressure I was talking about earlier on, that you end up being micromanaged. Now, it used to be micromanaged on a monthly basis. Now it's on a daily basis. Yeah. And that can, if not understood as a properly collaborative environment, that can actually make for a very unpleasant feeling. And you're constantly just bombarded with deadlines. But at the same time, I also have some optimism here, that I think that when I look at other industries and other disciplines, I think in software we talk about people issues a lot more than people in other disciplines.
Yeah.
I think, you know, although we have this reputation, and I think it's a reputation that sometimes other people hold of us, but we also hold it of ourselves. I don't think it's true. I think we spend a lot of time talking about the people stuff, more so than many other industries.
Yeah.
Particularly technical ones. We tend to value those. We see it as a problem or a systems issue to be understood. And you find that, you know, the fact that business movements now come out of software, rather than software being the consumer of business movements, it's now the producer of ideas that transform other companies that don't consider themselves to be software companies. Mm. You know, people, you go out there and people are quite happily using the term agile in a broader business context, where it simply didn't have any meaning or traction many years ago. Mm. And that we see these ideas going out. So I think that we're actually in a very good position. Mm. So I have a little bit of optimism there. I don't think, you know, I don't think it's all suddenly going to change overnight, but I have some optimism there, that I think that we focus on people issues probably a lot more than a lot of industries do.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a great thought on this topic. What would you recommend for a QA tester, software engineer, to learn and to prepare for this future?
So I think it's a case of that. Whenever I've been asked this question, I think my answer is generally always had the same core, and then the dressing is slightly different. So let me focus on what is the same core. The foundations. Mm-hmm. There are things that are much slower moving. The foundations, the principles, the deeper skills, the idea that what is it that we want from this software? And that's a high-level question that we frame in terms of requirements. But to understand how to test something is to understand what it should be doing in the first place. There's a cycle between these. There's a natural cycle. Get good at that. Mm-hmm. Get good at describing both in natural language, but also in code. What does that look like? What does the right thing look like? What does the wrong thing look like? Programming languages, they're not really going anywhere. They are going to continue very much along the trends that we have seen for the last decade, two decades, and so on. There's minor shifts every now and then, but nothing huge. Mm. So you're okay with whatever you're working on, but you know, keep a look at, if you're using one of the top 10 languages, well done, keep using it. But look at what's in the next top 10. Look to the rest of the top 20, because that may be where the language that your primary language is coming from.
Yeah.
The language that you'll be using in 10 years' time probably has, you know, I put very good money that it has already been invented and already has some kind of presence, if not in the top 20, the top 50.
Mm.
So, but also have that idea that you're not just stuck with one language. Many people characterize them as, I am a Java programmer. Mm. I am a C# programmer. You know, take a step outside that, say, you know, yeah, that's the language I'm using this year, but look around, you're obviously using lots of other languages.
Yeah.
Give those first class status as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's JavaScript as well. So yeah, give them first class status. Mm. So those core skills there. Understand that the tooling that you're using today is probably, the tools move surprisingly fast in some cases. Some are very slow, some are very fast. You know, if you go back 10 years, Kubernetes, people will be like, what?
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're in the Java space, hey, guess what? JUnit, it was developed in the 20th century. So some things don't change. But there are the idea that many of the tools you're looking at, they're going to improve, they're going to change. And you move job, you may discover there's a different tool ecosystem that has become popular where you are. Look to open source. Mm. Open source is where a lot of these ideas are coming from. So I generally tell people, you know, keep your feet on the ground. Look for the foundations. What are the core principles? What are the good ideas in software development that have stood the test of time? And then what are those skills as related to me? And then what are the exciting new bits that I can hold on to? And where do I find them? Mm. That would be my general advice. Yeah, it's a bit of balance.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much for this tip. I think the community will join it and go on to it. So we are already done with the time. I thank you very much for this insights, for your thoughts about the future. I'm very satisfied now. After some things about I think about the next days, and I wish you a very good conference here and good talks and a good time here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.